Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This is Emily Thomas, and you are listening to the Mom Struggling Well podcast. Hey friends, welcome back. This is episode 73, and I am talking to my friend Chris Habashi. Probably about 6 months ago, maybe even longer, I had a conversation with her that changed the way I go to the grocery store. I know that sounds really weird, but if you're like me, you go to the grocery store a lot. If you're like Rebecca Smith, you don't even know where your grocery store is in your neighborhood anymore. Sorry, Rebecca, I had to. Anyway, most of us spend a lot of time in the grocery store, and sometimes the sheer amount of choices can be completely overwhelming. Do I spend the money on organic? Does that even matter? Am I spending too much money? Am I poisoning my family if I don't? Listen, I've seen some documentaries on Netflix that made me want to just give up eating altogether. The whole topic can be really paralyzing, at least for me. All these fearful thoughts were rolling around in my head, and I didn't even realize it until I had a conversation with Chris. So this conversation is actually about produce and farming. I know that sounds weird, but I need you to stay with me. So this is what I love about Chris. She is a mom like us. She grew up on a farm, but then she moved to the city. And then that's when all the organic stuff started happening. And when she was trying to feed her family, she got curious about like what's really going on, because based on her farming background, it wasn't kind of adding up all the way. So she got curious, asked some questions, and it kind of accidentally turned into this whole nonprofit thing that is doing some really neat things in our community now. The other thing I love about Chris and her personality is she is not a person of extremes. She's pretty middle ground, moderate. And I am definitely an extreme black and white person. If there is a deep end, y'all, I'm gonna jump off it. So I need people like her in my life who can kind of talk me down off the ledge. Not literally, you guys. It's not that bad. The whole episode is not about farming, though. If you're kind of anti-listening to podcasts about farming, I personally don't subscribe to any farming podcasts, so I get that. There's a lot of other really good things in this episode as well. One of my favorite things she said was that good and right can still be hard. So we differentiate between what's a good kind of hard and a bad kind of hard, and how do you know which is which? And what happens if we have some serious doubts in our belief system? I know you're going to love this chat with Chris. Let's go ahead and get started. Hey, Chris, welcome to the show. How are you today?
I am doing great, Emily. Thanks so much for having me. I'm looking forward to chatting with you.
It is so, I love having gotten to know you. I think you're such a lovely human being. You're such an encouragement.
Thank you. I think the same of you. I just see your smiling face, even your little profile picture. It makes me happy.
I know. I love it. I love it. Okay. So will you please introduce yourself to my listeners?
Of course. I'm Chris Habashi, and I am, well, a lot of things, I suppose. One of my most recent titles is Executive Director of Connecting City to Farm, which is a nonprofit organization, and we can jump into that later. But I also homeschooled my two boys and have homeschooled my daughter for quite some time until this year. I'm a wife, and I live in Dallas. I grew up on a farm. I don't know.
What farm did you grow up on? Where was it?
Okay, so in Arkansas, southeast Arkansas, which is where we were. It was a lot of just farmland, which like think grain, not animals. So not like ranch, like a lot of times in Texas, you know, that's kind of where we are. That's what we think of farm. So yeah, so think like rice and cotton and soybeans. So I grew up like out on the fields, running around in the cotton fields and stuff.
Okay, so what brought you to Dallas then?
On the farm, and then moved to the little town to have better school options, which was like, when I say little, I mean like 8,000, right? Really small. And then went to Baylor and Waco, Texas. So that was probably like 40,000, which big time, girl. Culture shock. for this little farm girl. And then moved to Dallas for grad school. And I've been here for like 20 years. So feel like a lot of city in me at this point.
Okay. And so you homeschool your kids, but one of them goes to school now.
That's right. Yeah. So my oldest is in seventh grade. And then I have a fifth grader, two boys. And then my daughter's in third grade. And I've homeschooled all along. The first few years, I kind of did it on my own. And then we went to something called Classical Conversations, which is nationwide co-op, which is really great because they kind of do make a lot of the decisions for you and you just kind of follow their lead. And then you get a day of community together and then you go home and do the rest at home, which is great. And my boys are still in it. And then my daughter just started in classroom school this year. So that's been a big transition for us, but a really good one.
How have you done with sending your daughter to school?
Huge.
Personally.
Great question. Yeah, that was, I think it was a super fast transition. Like the Lord just really opened up that door probably really about 2 weeks before school started, which is pretty fast for us. Yeah. We usually process through a lot of decisions, you know? Yeah. So this was kind of go with it. And I think it was probably best for me not to have to ponder and anxious about it. Let's just do it.
Yeah.
It's been a hard transition, but a really good one. I kind of feel like that's the theme of this sort of season of my life, and maybe has been for a while, that just because something is hard doesn't mean it's bad, and good and right can still be hard to kind of work through and process through. Part of that too is not to avoid hard things, right? Because just something's hard doesn't mean I need to put all my efforts into kind of getting out of it, right? Getting away from it, but really sort of leaning into it and receiving and looking for the wisdom and the experience that can come through those transitions that really are so much out of our control.
So let me ask you then, because I'm thinking, because my daughter's in third grade, and third grade is hard.
Ooh. It is really
hard. I feel like
really
it's harder than the other grades.
I agree. And my daughter as well. So I don't know if the girl thing has something to do with it, but I agree. It's at that transition. And it did feel different with my daughter than it had been through with my boys. But I think for the two of us, for she and I specifically, it has been really good to have a little bit of distance, especially in the way of academics, you know. Mm-hmm. And the reason that she's at this school specifically is for kids with learning differences.
Okay.
Probably something like dyslexia. We haven't gotten it fully diagnosed. But in that pressure to educate your child, right, and to do it the right way and to make sure she's reading, then I'm putting that on her. And then she's receiving all that. And at that age, they really start looking around, I think. I don't know if you found this in your daughter, but comparing. So she's seeing, oh, the friend at church beside me can read really well and I can't. And so there's that whole, you know, we've talked so much about comparison and how it just robs you of the joy, right? And I see it early on for girls specifically. So she was feeling a lot of that discouragement and frustration. So the second really that we enrolled her and it was for sure that we were going to do this, I felt such relief in our relationship and was able to really, even then, before the first day of school, I was able to really enjoy her.
I love that. I would love that.
Yeah, I know. And I think that part has, like I said, a good and hard, like that's been that good part that kind of keeps me pushing through the hard, if that makes sense. Like I keep going back to, oh, but I know this is right. And I know it's so good for the two of us. And if you think big picture, of course, now when they're little, you're like, I got to educate them. I got to teach them how to read it, teach all the science and the math and blah, blah, right? You kind of take all that on. And then you kind of step back and wait. My relationship is so much more important, right? Yeah. In the grand scheme of who they are and who they're developing into. You just gain perspective, I think, or at least I have.
Yeah. Well, okay. So specifically good and hard coexisting. For a mom who's like, I can't tell if the situation or this, you know, not specifically with kids in general, but like in our lives as women, when hard things come up, how would you encourage someone who doesn't know, is this a good hard or is this a bad hard?
Oh, I think that is a great question. Emily and I kind of ask myself and wrestle with the Lord with that a lot, because I do find myself going, wait, because there are legitimate times where you're like, okay, let me step back here. let me rearrange some of the things, maybe, and then maybe that means, you know, for a homeschool mom, you send your kids to school, or maybe for, if your kids are in school, maybe you question, do I bring them home or do I put
maybe
them in
you send them to boarding school in
maybe
England.
You send them in boarding school and then you clean your house. I mean, that could be helpful to everyone. Or maybe it's not a kid thing. Maybe it's something like a job or in-law situation, whatever, right? There's all kinds of hard things. And I think just going back to me asking myself the question, what have I done? Have I taken this to the Lord? Have I prayed about it? Have I looked at my own sin, whether it's trying to control the situation or fear of doing the other thing, you know, or whatever the other choice might be, put them in school, bring them home, take this job, not, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever the decision is. Am I not doing it out of fear and really confess those before the Lord, receive his forgiveness, and then ask that really hard question, what do you want? What do you want me to do, Lord?
And listen, and be willing to actually do it. Yeah.
Exactly. The hard part, I think, is hearing from him in a way that you know it's him and then being confident in that, right?
Yeah.
Being able to look at yourself in the mirror or look at your husband or look at your friends and say, we feel the Lord leading us to do this. And that's enough.
Yeah.
I don't have to go on and explain. I don't have to just
go, is that okay?
Exactly. And get their opinion and get their vote and get their committee meeting around my decision.
Yeah. And it's hard because you want to seek wise counsel, but.
Exactly. Well, and there is the sense of community that the Lord creates for us. And certainly we are to participate in that. And we are to share and we are to receive affirmation and we receive comfort and encouragement from one another. Absolutely. No doubt about it. But when I put that above him and above asking him and seeking him and talking to him, then I'm really only taking a poll. You know, that's not really the design of community.
Not exactly.
That's not really what it's for.
Or exactly not. Yes.
You're right. It's exactly opposite of that. And I think just trust. And that's part of the faith journey, which is so hard that we're constantly kind of wrestling with this. Am I doing it right? And feeling his peace. I just don't think we're ever going to be at this, ta-da. I mean, I know we're not until we're with the Lord. And that's just kind of living in a fallen and broken world with messy people when we are messy people.
Yeah. You mentioned to me that one of the concerns you have is chipping away at big issues that when you're doing the right thing, but it seems like it's so small. Like, are you even making a difference?
It's true.
What are we even laboring for here?
It is true. Whether it's our kids or our ministry, whatever it looks like, I sometimes can get really overwhelmed by looking at that. And I just keep going back to, he keeps giving me the 5 loaves and 2 fish, right? Mm-hmm. And that was such a small, tiny little contribution, right? But that sweet little obedient boy, like he did it. He gave what he had. And I think of the woman who gave her last 2 coins and that was it. Was all she had. And of course, compared to the Pharisees and their big giant, you know, treasury boxes that they bought, whatever, then it looks so tiny. But really, Jesus himself said, she's the one who gave the most, you know? Mm. And he took that small little contribution of the boys' lunch, fed 5,000 people. That's a lot of people. Yeah. And so the Lord has given me this little, you know, sort of nugget of truth that instead of being overwhelmed by my inability, I choose to be overcome by his sovereignty.
So good. And it's hard when we can't see it because then you think like it really, for sure, nothing's happening. It's not accurate.
Exactly, whether it's in our kids every day and we still pray over them or we still say verses over them or we still whatever, or again in our jobs, if that's our ministry or even just our work life in the office where you feel like the only one who's trusting or following or the only one who believes, our small acts of faithfulness really are so big to him, you know, and he, and really the fact that he can do so much with them is my inability is so tiny and small.
He can do anything with it. That's what's amazing.
So big. So
the biggest thing we could imagine, he could do bigger than that.
Exactly. Exactly. And just so many times in the Psalms, it says, you know, his wisdom has no end, no end. Limitless understanding and resources. When I think of the resources I have and, oh, I can make a phone call or I could give a little here or I could, you know, maybe drive a friend to such and such or I could whatever little resources I have, right? Mm-hmm. I think of his are completely endless. Yeah. All of the things that he can orchestrate and manage, and it's his story that he gets to write. And yes. He gets to manage and orchestrate it. And it's just a privilege to participate, right? And yes. to be anywhere near what he's doing and how he's moving. And there's a sense of rest in that. And so when things are hard, I can fall back on this faith that I can't see, and I don't know the end of, and I don't understand it, I don't have the perspective. But if I choose to believe, which is kind of one of the things, one of the big words in the little nugget that he gave me, instead of being overwhelmed, I choose to believe, right?
Yeah.
So it doesn't just get easy. I don't wish wake up one morning and go, oh, okay, got it. Check.
I have all these feelings of belief right now. I'm overcome with them. No, probably.
Yeah, you have to choose it. I have to choose it. Again yeah. and again and again, really.
Yeah. I think so many people think, well, I have questions, so that must mean that I'm not actually a believer. Mm-hmm. Well, it actually means you're just like Job and David and all the other people who had questions.
All of
like
them.
Everybody has questions.
All of them. Yes. And not only questions, but so many failures in all of that, you know?
Yes.
And falling down and letting him pick you back up and bring you back to him and restore your faith and show you again and again and again that his love is so huge, just huge. I think just the bigness of God is becoming real to me, you know, kind of what he's speaking to me is just how big he is.
I love that. You have seen God moving in a direction and you and your family are following it for y'all's lives. Tell me about that, because when we spoke about it, I felt a lot of relief in my own self about food and things like that. And so I want you to tell me the story because I feel like it's going to be really helpful to people.
Okay, good. I hope so, because it was helpful for me too, Emily, which is why I feel it. Yeah, I saw the relief on your face when I told you. I'm like, I know, isn't it awesome? But okay, so my brother and I, we grew up on a farm. My brother is still on the farm. And I obviously have been in the city for a while, about 20 years. And through that time, I've seen this just kind of a widening gap of understanding between the farm life and people in the city and what we know about where our food is grown and how it's grown. And even growing up on a commercial farm, you know, I was always like, I don't think I'm supposed to buy organic, but I don't really know why. And that food label is kind of convincing. Now I feel like, oh, it's kind of scary. Like, well, what is it? It's just confusion.
Okay. So you knew as a kid, you felt like you were not supposed to buy organic?
No, I'm sorry. Like as I started, I'll just say like maybe in the past 10 years, I began to question, like, should I be buying organic? Like, I don't, I grew up in a way that wasn't promoting organic food, right? Or, and please hear me saying, I have nothing against organic food or farmers or anything like that. It's not bad at all. But for me, I was just very confused by food labels and marketing and headlines, because I feel like what was happening was, I mean, my fear was being tapped into, right?
Yeah. The very last thing we want to do when we're going shopping and you're putting, like, people put like special protectors on their carts of the grocery store so you don't get germs on your babies. And like, we want to do so good. And so you don't want to like be poisoning them with the strawberries.
Exactly. And so, you know, I'm willing to pay a little more to make sure. I got to make sure. And I think kind of what you're saying while ago about this control thing, it kind of goes all back to the things that I can control, right? And so I'm willing to pay a higher price for it. And I'm willing to take whatever is there in the way of food labels and marketing and all that. But really when I started, so back to the organization, Connecting City to Farm, what my brother and I began to see was that this widening gap of people walking on a farm. It had been so long, you know, since a lot of people had done that, that it was this opening for fear and confusion was there, you know, that we could just have this. Now this conversation was just filled with fear and confusion. And I don't know.
Because we have no idea. I don't know if I've ever actually been on a farm. I probably have.
Yeah.
But it's
you probably have.
Not
but
part of my life.
It's right. And I think that, you know, more people in our country are moving to the cities, and they have been for quite some time. And that's just the way it is. But with that comes just kind of a distance in where our food is grown. And so I put my science hat back on, which was kind of fun. I was a little surprised at how much fun it was. I'm like, okay, let me go ask some of these questions. You know, my curiosity is piqued. So what is the deal here?
So your main question was, how important is organic? Is that
Yeah, and I think that's probably where it started. Like, what's up with organic, right? Again, not that organic's bad. It is absolutely not. But I just couldn't figure out, and I wanted to know, why is it being pushed?
Yeah.
But yet I kind of know just from my farming background, it couldn't be that bad, right? Non-organic can't be that bad. So what are some answers here.
Okay.
So I feel like as I did some research, again, I just got this huge amount of freedom in knowing and seeing both sides of it.
Okay.
So what I've learned is that the organic movement started about 30 years ago. And you know what? It started with good reason. There were legitimate concerns about pesticides and about how our food was grown at that time. And so a federal group got together and created Certified Organic. Okay. So they made rules and regulations that if your food is going to be, you know, a farmer, if you're going to grow certified organic food, it's going to look like this. And they have a lot, I mean, a huge book of regulations.
Okay.
And that was 30 years ago that they made those. So what's happened is they have stuck with that all along.
Okay.
So it's still 30 years old. But what has happened actually in modern farming, commercial farming, whatever you want to call it, non-organic, is that they've taken those issues that the organic movement kind of highlighted, like conservation issues and like pesticides and like all of these things that were legitimate concerns, you know, and they have changed. So they are even more strict on the pesticides and chemicals that they use, which really aren't all bad. And even in the organic field textbook, there are some that they use. So it's not like they use no pesticides. It's just a strictly regulated ones, right?
Okay. But commercial farms have kind of cleaned their act up, so to speak, since then.
So much so that they've cleaned their act up with chemicals. They are figuring out ways to use less water and enrich the soil that's there, so much that they're putting some of their farmland back into natural habitation.
Okay.
If they look at their farmland and they're like, you know what, that plot doesn't, it's not really making a lot. Let's just give it back to the animals. So they plant trees and put it back at forest land. And because of their farming practices, they've been able to get a lot more yield out of the same amount of land.
Okay.
And it's safer. And it's better. And as far as like the nutritional differences between organic and non-organic, a ton of scientific evidence has been done. And it's exactly the same in the way of nutrition. Nothing's different there.
Okay. Because you do hear that you're basically eating cardboard if you don't eat an organic apple.
That's what you hear. And the truth is, Emily, like all of that kind of process stuff happens after it leaves the farm, when it goes to like the food industry, what I'll call that, to where you are putting sugars and all of these other ingredients in the mixes and the packages and all of that. Those are legitimate concerns, I'll just say. Like that is kind of where, well, I just kind of try to stay away from. So what I have done for my family is I just kind of say, eat real food, right? So real food, whether it's fresh produce or lean meats or whatever it is, but it feels very reasonable. Not extreme either way, right? Not this super high end of organic or super low end of junk food, the convenience stores or, you know, which I saw this little thing on Instagram the other day that the mom was like, she had a shopping cart and all in her shopping cart were like organic foods and gluten free and this and this and this. And then she was like, and we're running by Taco Bell on the way home. It's so true.
It is hard. And you try so hard. And then you're like, that's it. We're going to Sonic. I can't even.
Exactly. No, it's true. Which again was part of my curiosity. I'm like, okay, what is up? Because it does feel like such extremes, right? Yes. And I feel like for most of my life, the Lord has just led me to kind of be in this sort of content place of non-extremes.
Yeah. And I am not one of those. I am more extreme. And so that's why I think when you talked about this, I felt a lot of freedom because there is a lot of fear. And I don't know. Less for us, I think. I think we just think of our kids and we want to do the best thing by them.
And I think, again, so what I can kind of be okay with in my home is I try my best to not buy a lot of packaged foods, snacks and such. I try to buy fresh produce and vegetables and fruits and cheese and milk. You just like food, right? This kind of normal, like real food that I can look at and recognize, know what it is. And I have that a lot. We only drink water in our house, except for the coffee, of course, for me, my husband, because I couldn't live without it. But anyway, but kids drink water. And we have as much real food as possible all the time. And then really when we're out. And that's our culture. And that's where we live. So there's going to be goldfish everywhere.
Yeah.
And there's going to be sodas that are at the birthday party. And there's going to be cake that came from Kroger and it has a bunch of sugar. And that's fine.
Yeah.
So hopefully I'm creating this balance where it's not fear and it's not breaking my budget. Because I know for a lot of times there's tension in the home with the budget. Like, you're kidding me. Yeah. We're paying this much for organic food. But you're like, but I can't poison my kid. And you're like, wait, hang on here.
Yeah.
Where is the logical middle, like a reasonable place to land?
Well, I've even had friends who only eat organic and I think, well, I would love to have you over for dinner, but I can't afford that. But I should afford that. And I know I'm failing. I get that I'm failing as a person and as a parent because we eat non-organic. But
right. Emily, I think you're right. Just that freedom and relief that came when I realized I don't have to do that. And to have really what I would consider, because I've really just scratched the surface. When I said I put my science hat on, you know, I just kind of scratched the surface. There's plenty more. But what I did learn, there are two sides. And I'm like, all right, that's a good place to start for me to go into the grocery store and be confident to say, you know what, I don't need to be bound up by fear here, right? Mm-hmm. I can just buy some reasonable things that I know are okay. And I'm fine with that. And I don't have to break the budget. I don't have to leave feeling guilty or confused or feeling like I should have bought the organic. Anyway, but I do feel like it brings a lot of relief and really kind of seeps into the rest, hopefully the rest of my life as well, to just kind of content, a place of contentment. And again, mm-hmm. not extreme anything.
In your research, have you found that anything needs to be organic? Like they say, there's like the dirty dozen or the ones that...
Right, right. Yeah, you know, I really haven't found anything, even so much so that I kind of feel like, and again, this is just my personal opinion, so there is absolutely nothing wrong with organic, but mm-hmm. even the messages of it being like more environmentally friendly, they're just kind of not the research that I have found because of the way that you can farm in modern farming, again, with the information that we have and all of this great revelation, we can get a whole lot more yield on such a smaller plot of land. Because mm-hmm. if you think organic farming, then they're very limited pesticides. It requires a lot more water and a lot more land because you have to work around the weeds. There's a lot of things that you can't do. So you may get 10 ears of corn on the same plot of land that for non-organic farming, you can get mm-hmm. a lot more.
Okay. So do general farmers have the same feeling like organic is kind of a racket?
Yeah, they do. I'm just going to say it.
And they don't just feel that because it's eating into their profits.
That's right. And actual. In fact, I have asked our farmers very specifically, like, okay, tell me, like, why would I want to buy organic? And they will, like, I'm thinking of two farmers in particular, and they kind of told me the same thing. They were like, we have a lot of really good friends who are organic farmers, and they're great guys. And you know what? They came to a place in their business, just like we did, they're talking about themselves, where you kind of, you know, you get to that place in your business where you're growing and you're like, okay, either I'm going to have to carve out like kind of a niche market to make this work, or I'm going to have to expand. You kind of come to the fork in the road in your business. And so their friends went the one way to organic farming, and they went the other way to kind of just bring in the volume to be able to make a business grow, you know, mm-hmm. and they were otherwise the same guys before. Does that make sense? So the guy mm-hmm. just was like, oh, well, if I go organic, I can make some money that doing that way. Mm-hmm. And the organic farmers are like, this is working for my business. Right. And it's not that they're opposed to these things or trying to sell anybody on it, but people are paying a lot of money for organic produce. And the thing that I have also seen is when you look back 30 years ago in this kind of regulations, I thought to myself, I was like, well, I wonder why they haven't just changed these things to make them to where you can, you know, bring in some other practices that now we know more science on. But then I asked myself, I'm like, well, why would you? Why would they change anything? They've got a great niche going. They've got a great thing going. Why change anything? So they're really not even, I mean, at this point, I don't think they're really necessarily been motivated to bring in some other more environmentally friendly practices and allow for other things because their market is going quite well.
Yeah. Is there tension between the two?
None. Between the farmers, you mean?
Yeah.
None. They're buddies. They're fine. They're just like, okay. I chose, it would be like, you know, so you're podcasting. Well, maybe your friend blogs. Okay, cool. Like that's great. Just what you chose to be your outlet, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay. So it's not, there's none, absolutely none. So when I asked my farmer, I'm like, okay, so why would a person like me in the city, why would I choose organic? And he's like, well, you know, if you like that farmer, that would be a good way to support him. I'm like, what? You mean the farmer?
I don't care about the farmer.
But I don't know his name. He's like, well, then I don't know why you'd want to support him, but you can do what you want to. You know, I mean, in the very same way that you might have a friend and she makes really great jewelry and you're like, oh, I want to support my friend. You're like, but it's the same as Target. Yep. You know what I mean? Like, that's why you would choose it.
So commercial farmers aren't like doing evil laughs going, we're killing the masses slowly.
They're not at all. Yeah. They're great guys. In fact, they are very intentionally asking questions about like, what can we do? Because they have a lot of freedom to try different practices and conserve more water and have a better use of land, you know? So they're really constantly asking those questions, even so much that they look at the insects that are flying around their fields, right? Okay. And I've learned that they're good guys and bad guys, insects. And so our farmers are really intentionally managing that they want their dragonflies, they want their ladybugs, they want all of these good guys to control the population of the bad guy insects that are eating away at their rice or soybeans or whatever it is. And they really are waiting till the very last minute to do anything in the way of pesticides for the insects they do not want to spray. Number one, it's expensive. Right? The chemicals are expensive. And number two, they're trying to be good stewards of the land. And the land, like if you think of an artist and his canvas, right? That's kind of, he likes that. That's what he uses, right? Yeah. This is their land. This is what they use. They want to preserve it. They want to enrich it. They don't want to poison it.
That's a really good point.
Yeah. It's like their tool of their trade, literally. A truck driver, he's not going to crash his truck. He's got to use it, right? He's going to take care of it. Point. And so the same with the farmer.
Huh. Okay.
I know. It's kind of just a different sort of mindset. Again, another side.
Yeah. Okay. So it's a nonprofit, yes?
Uh-huh. Yes, it is a nonprofit.
Connecting city to farm. And you do that through Farm Camp.
Yes. Okay. So two ways we make connections is what we say. Number one is through media like this, where we're kind of telling this ag story and about how the great things that are actually happening in modern non-organic agriculture. And then the other thing that we do is an action piece called Farm Camp. Where when we entered into this conversation about farming and agriculture, it obviously brought up the nutrition and what's good and what's not and all of that. And so in that conversation, I learned some really staggering statistics that 50% of the kids in Dallas County, again, which is where we live, are obese. And it's really because of their food insecurity.
Tell me about food insecurity.
Okay, so we've been talking about this kind of high level of organic, high-priced food. Well, the other extreme is this packaged convenience store sodas, that kind of thing. So food insecurity, I learned what a food desert is. So when I heard desert, I'm like, oh, out where nobody lives. Okay, not that. So a densely populated urban area. So lots of little homes all together, people living all together, huge population, no grocery store. So like within a 6-mile radius, there's no grocery store.
That is far.
It's really far. And like, I don't know exactly where you live, but I could probably walk to like 4 really great grocery stores.
Yeah.
I know, right?
Definitely.
And most of these homes don't have cars, potentially single moms, single parent homes. So it's not like they're able to hop in the car and even drive the 6 miles. It's a bus trip that takes them an hour and a half, sometimes one way.
And you're waiting out in the elements.
Yeah. And how much produce are you going to bring home on the bus?
Right? Oh, probably I know. I lived in China for a while. And so we did have to take the bus to get to the grocery store. There was no option. But you did. I mean, I felt like a turtle when I would have a backpack full of heavy food. And then carrying my groceries on a bus was so packed. Like, I hated going to the grocery store.
Right. So either there's that option or there's the convenience store right around the corner that, of course, has, you know, packaged stuff and sodas and whatever, just because that's all that's there. And not sure what age these kids are being left alone, right? And so that's kind of their option. So
they're certainly not going to go to the grocery store on a bus to get an apple.
I know. And then so you see that there are few choices in the convenience store, so much so that I heard this from the Dallas Independent School District nutritionist, and she said that most middle schoolers throw away their oranges on their lunch tray because they don't know how to eat them.
Oh my gosh.
Wait, you don't know how to eat them? Or you just kind of choose not? She's like, no, they just toss them. They don't know how to eat them. For me, what I've seen is trying to teach kids the value, like the personal value to choosing to eat the orange or the broccoli or whatever, you know, so maybe it doesn't taste good, but you're worth it, right? Mm-hmm. Your body is worth it and it is going to bring you good. What you put into your body makes a difference. Okay. So farm camp you mentioned. Mm-hmm. So we take these kids who are living in these underserved food desert areas and we go to our farmhouse in Arkansas. And while we're there, we teach them really a comprehensive healthy lifestyle. Okay. So we're looking at good nutrition, get up and move, choose water over sodas, fresh air okay. over screen time, how to choose a friend, be oh, a friend wow. to have a friend, like those safe relationships, how to bring good to someone else so they bring good to you. Just some of those nuggets of truth, hopefully to catch them early, because the cycle of poverty is such that when they miss this window, you know, of child development where you're getting those good nutritions for healthy bones and strong muscles and brain functioning and all that, mm-hmm. if you miss that So you just got a lot of making up to do, you know, even if you do learn those lessons later on, those good okay. health lessons.
So who gets to go?
Yeah. Okay. So we're partnering with organizations that are already in those areas because okay. otherwise I don't really know how we choose the kids, right? I mean, we don't yeah. have the kids, but yeah. we have partnered with a church and then we've partnered with another organization that does mentoring in these areas in this okay. particular neighborhood. So we take the kids and their leaders from that organization okay. so that we're just supplementing their relationship, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's great.
We're not at a capacity right now to build those long-term relationships and, you know, really get to know those kids, which we know that's what happened, what change really comes from. But what
yeah,
we
but
do
you're
is
help-
supplement
yeah.
that, right?
Yeah,
so if we bring great. The leaders along, right, they can hear the message and really it has become a real springboard for them once they get back into their normal life, right, that still has the same food and the same activities mm-hmm. and all that. And they can say, hey, remember at farm camp, we talked about water and we talked about, come on, let's get up and move. Remember at farm camp, we talked about walking. Mm-hmm. Let's get up, mm-hmm. walk around a little bit. So it can okay. launch into some of those hopefully life-changing conversations.
Now, right? do they pay to go or do people pay for...
No, it's free okay. for the kids and the leaders. That's kind of part of our nonprofit organization. So we raise money. It's tax deductible donations okay. and provide this supplement to the organizations, to the kids for free.
How long is the camp?
4 days.
Okay.
So it's about a 6-hour drive, which is a little bit far, but they're okay. We can make the best of that. And then we're there for 3 nights and then we travel back. So okay. they're there at our farmhouse and we do, you know, real structured lessons about nutrition and good health and that kind of thing.
What's been the most surprising thing that a kid who was, you know, that age didn't know?
Okay, so one, all of our menu, of course, is fresh produce and vegetables and stuff like that. So we put out a kind of our buffet and one little girl said, what are those? And I was like, oh, those are blueberries. Really? So she didn't know what blueberries were,
okay,
which was
wow.
really exciting to How introduce
old?
Her to.
How old are you?
She was 8.
Wow. Okay.
And then just recently, our most recent group was high school girls. And one of the girls kind of at the end, which are a little bit older, right? And are able to kind of process a lot mm. more. So by the end, we're like, hey, what are you going to do differently? And she said, I realize how terribly I eat. I'm going to eat better. And I'm going to, I love the way this food tastes. I didn't know it would taste so good. I've never had almonds before and they're really good.
Huh. Wow.
I know. I was a little bit excited that we were able to introduce her to some new things. So I think that's probably another kid had never seen cantaloupe before. So that okay. was another one that was kind of an introduction to new food. But then even being out there, like seeing how corn is grown. Oh, yeah. Another one did not know what corn on the cob was. He had like whole oh, kernel
yeah.
corn.
Yeah,
but we served corn on the cob because we had been in a cornfield, came home, boiled the corn and served it corn on the cob, which was, he was like, oh, what is this? I've never seen it like this. Huh. So a lot of really interesting lessons. In fact, that same little boy, we were out in the cornfield and our farmer was out there and Matt was just doing such a great job of, you know, just talking to him about it and here, shuck some and pull some off and all that. And one of the little boys said, can I eat it? And he was like, sure, that's fine. You can, you know, just pick it right off. And he said, it's probably not going to taste like the corn that you're used to because the corn that we grow in the field, this field is a little more like grain, like that you would use for cornmeal and that kind of corn, not necessarily the vegetable kind of corn that you eat, you know? Mm-hmm. And so he was trying to explain this to the boy, and the boy was like, oh, okay, so some corn is grown in the field and some comes from the store. It's like, well, no. We're getting there, but not quite.
Oh, wow.
And that was like a 12-year-old boy, and he was really trying to engage and learn. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it really was quite amazing. And just to see the kids' reaction, you know, they're running out in a rice field, and they say things like, I feel so free out here. And I'm like, wow, that's interesting.
That's powerful. Yeah.
It is really powerful. And another one of our high school girls recently said, I am getting in a kind of our little debriefing. She said, I am so thankful for the food that I get to buy in the grocery store. I come out here and I walk in the field and I think, oh, farmer has to plant it and water it and care for it and harvest it and take it to the grain bin and take it to the mill. And somehow it gets to my store and I get to buy it. Wow. I'm really thankful.
So it's like seen as a privilege instead of like, what the heck is this weird thing?
Right.
So you find that you give them kind of an action plan at the end, and they go away thinking differently. You're seeing a change in thinking.
That is definitely our hope. And again, it kind of goes back to what we were talking about, Emily, about our little 5 loaves and 2 fish, right? It feels kind of small. And I'm like, well, these are just 3 little days of their life, and what's it going to do? And maybe they'll drink some more water, and maybe they'll, you know, get up and move a little more, or whatever that looks like. But really, we hope that they do. We hope that these are seeds of truth that the Lord is planting in their hearts and minds, and that they will make a change. And that, you know how it is when you go away to camp, or when you go to some other experience out of your normal setting, and you just hear things differently, and they just stick with you, right?
Yep.
And we're hoping for that. We're really praying over those seeds that are planted, that it will come back and make a difference in their lives. And in, you know, especially with these high school girls that we just hosted, I'm like, hey, these girls are going to have kids someday. You know, maybe they'll teach them some of this. Maybe this will make a small difference in their whole neighborhood. We'll see. But it does feel like one of those things where I could easily become overwhelmed by a huge, problem, I guess. I don't know, issue, public issue, if you want to call it that. But at the same time, I'm really excited to throw my little seeds in the pot, you know, and throw my little energy and my efforts and my resources and trust that the Lord is going to expand that however he wishes, and just kind of follow that in obedience, in a lot of clear passion and enthusiasm, I think. And even though it's hard some days and I don't really know where this is going, I'm excited on the journey.
I promise you, I've never met a more excited person about farming. It's great, but it is. I love that God puts things in our hearts that are like, well, okay.
I know. I do feel a little like some of my friends are like, seriously, enough about the farming.
I think it's great. And personally, every time I go to the grocery store, I think I don't have to buy organic because Chris said.
Do you really, Emily? Do you really?
I am serious.
That is awesome. I mean, I just have to say, while it is a small piece of your overall life, doesn't it feel good to just be like, I know, like I have an answer for this, right?
I am not killing my family slowly just to save $2.
Yes.
Feels good.
It does feel good, doesn't it?
Thank you so much for sharing that message. We are basically out of time. I'm going to just ask you though, anyhow, what can you not stop talking about?
Oh my goodness, girl. My kids have started going to Mathnasium.
Okay. I don't know about it.
Okay. It's kind of like a math tutoring place, except for the fact that because we homeschool, I sort of made it our math, like our whole math, not just a math supplement.
That is such a good idea because I hate teaching math.
I know. Me too. That's why I'm like, I got to outsource this thing. And I don't know what they do there, but they have made my two boys so excited about math. It is crazy. They go to math parties on Saturday.
Math parties on Saturday. Oh my goodness.
I mean, I'm telling you, it is like the best place on earth. They are so motivated. And so finally, they come home with little card punches and little this and little that, little spins. I don't know what all kind of reward systems they have going.
But
then the
care.
Other day, I was like, okay, hang on, boys. Are you really learning math or are you just getting a bunch of candy? And they're like, no, I feel so much better about my math. I know my multiplication and I know how to long division and I know this and this. And I'm like, good grief. I don't know what y'all are doing there, but it is awesome.
So you send them there like at a regularly scheduled time, or you just take them whenever?
Okay. So you know, the way it's like a gymnasium, like a gym, because it's mathnasium, right? Okay. So they have open hours between 3 and 7 is what ours is. Anyway, so you just go and drop them off, and it's total drop off. And they're like there is like math instruction. So they're being taught their math skills.
Killing me right now. Math is what is making my life third grade math is may or may not be the end of me right now.
Yeah. So this is, I'm telling you, mathnasium is your answer, girl. It is, like, I was shocked at how happy we all are. It's not okay. Kidding. I'm not, I like, you're going to, I know you think I'm crazy.
No, I mean, you're just giving me hope for the future.
Really? Like, it is a super deal. It is, just because it was totally off my plate.
I don't even want a math plate. I don't even want to see the word math.
I know. Awesome. Like, right. And they are all excited about it and they love math. The instructor's there.
Okay.
I know.
Googling that business, man. It's happening for us. Thank you so much, Chris. You've really brought me so much joy on so many different weird levels.
I was just about to say, I don't know. Are we? Thank you for having me, Emily.
Are we
fine. Done?
It's fine. Done? I don't know.
I feel like I needed to have a little closing statement there.
Good and right can still be hard. So good. I really need to remember that because I'm kind of a baby and when things get tough, I'd rather not play anymore. So I need that reminder. I loved how Chris stepped out and went ahead and sent one of her kiddos to school because it was a better fit for her and her daughter. I homeschool part-time and for me, it is really hard. I'm one of the reluctant homeschool moms. Some people are really into it. I'm not that into it. For me though, it is a good kind of hard. It is a refining kind of hard that is making my daughter and I, Lord willing, better people. It isn't something that needs to stop, but it is easy to want to quit things when they're hard. And so I love her thoughts on that. I also love the reminder from Chris to stop and think about what God's word actually says. Like, Jesus fed 5,000 people. That's a lot of people. He has a lot of power. His wisdom, it says, has no end. Like, not an end. I don't know. I think sometimes we gloss over those words that we've heard a million times and we don't stop and go, wow, like that's a really big deal. It's the biggest deal. So what will your strategy be to struggle well this week? Maybe when she talked about creating a little bit of distance with her kids because they were kind of all the time together every minute. Maybe you think, oh man, I wonder if I could do that. I didn't feel like I was allowed to or something. Sometimes we don't give ourselves freedom to do things just because we kind of like made up a rule about it. You know what I mean? So maybe a little bit of distance would be good. Just for you, for health and balance and stuff. Maybe this week, like she talked about, you can read the Bible looking for evidence of how big God is. And I remember several episodes back, Laura Kelly was talking about how she just reads from one bold section to another bold section. Sometimes we sit down and think, oh, I got to read that whole book or I need to read that whole chapter. And we may not have time for that. Doing something is better than nothing. So pick a passage, read it and say, Lord, what do you have to tell me about this particular struggle that I have? I don't think you're big enough. Show me how huge you are in this. Or I don't trust that you're here. Show me how you're present in this passage and just interact with it and talk to him. If you struggle feeling that your failures are too big for God to handle, read the Bible this week with an eye for how God responded to people's questions and people's failures. He never changes, so what he does there, we can know he's still doing. Maybe you look up mathnasium and see if that could help your kiddos. I'm gonna see if my daughter can move in there. Maybe this week you hop on to the World Wide Web and you look up Chris's nonprofit and their mission, Connecting City to Farm, and see how you can help. Or maybe, just maybe, you go grocery shopping and you buy what you can afford and what you feel good about, organic or not, without having any guilty feelings, without having any confusion. So good. Well, guys, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode. It is such a joy for me to interact with you guys. You can find me on Instagram, on Facebook, at Mom Struggling Well. Don't forget to hop on Instagram on Wednesday night for Struggle Well Wednesday, where we talk about the shenanigans our children have been up to and how we've made it through. Also, I'm going to be at the IF Gathering this weekend in Austin. Send me a message if you are going to be there. I would really love to meet you. Hope y'all have a great week of struggling well.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.